the Rugby Union Podcast.
Welcome to the William Hill Six Nations Rugby Union Podcast. I'm Michael Casey. As we look ahead to round three of the 2015 competition, I'm delighted to say that, as normal, I am joined by former England prop forward Jeff Probyn as we preview this weekend's three games. Jeff, they had a rest weekend last weekend, but there's still stories coming out about all the action ahead of this weekend and the backlash from round two. And we've got three exciting fixtures to look forward to again at this weekend.
Yeah, in all probability this weekend, Michael, we're going to discover who's going to get the wooden spoon and who could get the Grand Slam. So it's all to play for, really. Round three is where most of the serious rugby gets played. And the way the fixtures have panned out and the fact that you've got the two unbeaten teams facing each other and the two teams at the bottom of the table facing each other, it's all or nothing. It's do or die weekend.
Certainly seems that way. We'll just start off with a quick catch-up on the three results from last weekend. Of course, England, they played their first game at Twickenham, 47-17, convincing enough win, I guess, over Italy. Although, is there a slight concern that England let the Italians in three times, Jeff?
Well, I think you've got to look at it and say fair play to the Italians. The 47 points to 17 is not a true reflection on the game. England did get a couple of tries that, realistically, if we were totally honest, I'm surprised that they were allowed. Certainly the Billy Vinopola try, there's no doubt that Gorey was underneath Vinopola with the ball on his chest and his legs in touch. There's no way that try should have been given. I don't know what the TMO was on, but whatever it was, it was affecting his vision. As far as the Ben Youngs try, he had half the England pack in front of him. That means they're offside. In theory, if you're going to do a quick tap, you have to have your players onside. So there's two tries. I mean, Italy would still have lost the game, but it would have been that little bit closer. It would have come down to just the kicking and one try. And, you know, in the game as close as that, should Italy have a good kicking day? They're playing against Scotland, up in Scotland. They'll take a lot out of that game at Twickenham that will take them full for this week.
I didn't realise you're part of the Azzurri, Jeff. I didn't know. That's the way you've gone.
No, I'm not. You know, you look at it, and the reality is you do have to look at what Italy did. If you consider that the week previously England played Wales, Wales could only score one try. The Italians put three tries past England, and England have one of the best defences in the Six Nations. Now, you could argue that maybe the England players have got a bit off the boil because, brackets, it's only Italy. But it was their first game at Twickenham in the Six Nations, their first chance to show the England supporters, this is our team, this is what we can do. And let's be honest, 5 minutes into the game, when Parisi sneaked over for that try, and it wasn't exactly just sneaking over, he threw a dummy, he sidestepped a couple of people and went through two or three tackles. The same thing with the centres, you know, as they went through and scored their tries. I think Massey scored two tries, wasn't he, I think? Mm. Or the others, I'm not sure which one it was now off the top of my head. But two good tries. It wasn't as if they were lucky tries. It wasn't against the run of play. The Italians actually structured their game. From an England point of view, you look at that and you say, where did we go wrong? What lapses in concentration did we have? If we do this against Ireland, it will cause us serious problems. And so the Italians playing well at Twickenham is good for England because it makes us realise that we're not invincible. But it's also good for Italy because it gives them a bit of confidence. I think a lot of people have been down on Italy and they don't need to be. There's been questions about why they should be in the Six Nations. They should be in the Six Nations because they're capable of scoring three tries against one of the best sides that are playing.
Yeah, Luca Marisi with the two tries, and as you say, Sergio Parisi, say it pretty much every time we do a recording, but I think if he'd been born as an Englishman or a Kiwi or a South African Australian, he would have a place well and truly amongst the world greats for the services he has done to Italian rugby around some questionable 15s in his time, I'd imagine. The two other games from last weekend, of course, saw wins for Ireland in a pretty narrow circumstances against France, and then also on Sunday, Scotland. I mean, there was a bit of controversy in the game, of course, regarding some decisions, but they ultimately fell by 26 points to 23 at home to Wales in an interesting game. And Wales just again, maybe running out of ideas at certain points in the game, Jeff?
I think they were. I think when you look at the games, particularly the Scotland-Wales game, Wales dominated that game to such an extent. It was unbelievable. I mean, 80, 90% of possession and territory for large sections of the game. It did come down to a bit of luck and a bit of, should we say, interesting refereeing from Jackson. But the reality is that Wales, for all that domination, couldn't break down the Scottish defence, couldn't score. I actually don't think it's that the Scottish defence was that good. I think it's that the Welsh were that bad. They really didn't fire on all cylinders. They'll be very, very pleased to have George North back in the side this week. And it'll be interesting to see how they go.
Certainly will. We'll start by talking about the weekend's first game. Then we go to Murrayfield again. As you mentioned, it's the Battle of the Wooden Spoon. Potentially Scotland 1-7 host Italy 5-1. The handicap about this one is 11 points. Now, do you think that might be a little bit disrespectful to this Italian side, who proved last weekend, you know, Morisi, they've got a very handy centre capable of breaking lines. Let's not forget he was up against one of the centre partnerships that's supposed to be in form, particularly the Northern Hemisphere world of rugby, last weekend, and still did the business. Plus 11 points on Italy at 10-11, Jeff, or do you think that Scotland might be comfortable this time out?
Well, I'm not so sure. I think that the Scots have also lost Richie Gray, which is a big, big blow to them. He's been a stalwart of their scrum, a man who's helped them win a lot of line-out ball, not only their own ball, but also the opposition's. 6'10", big, big man. Losing him is a blow for Scotland. They've also lost Tom Visser, and they've got Seymour in there. So this is a bit of a change side as far as Scotland's concerned. The Italians have lost a couple of players as well. They've got McLean playing back at fullback now. I actually think it's going to be a close game, and I think Italy could steal it. I honestly think that Italy could steal it. I think that Italy could actually come away from this game with between a 3 and an 8-point victory.
Well, they're 5-1 on the outright, so if you want to get really, really interesting, you can click on the winning margins tab, of which we have 3. Italy by 1-12 is 11-2, so the traders think, you know, if there is any chance Italy will do it, it'll be a pretty narrow scoreline. 1-5-point victory for Italy is 8-1, so some big prices there. I'll just run through, sir, the Scottish team news. Of course, you mentioned some of the changes there. The big one, though, I guess Peter Horn is coming at 10. To be fair, it's been pretty solid for Glasgow, who've been one of the sides of the Guinness Pro 12 for the last couple of seasons. He's in for Finn Russell, who, of course, had his appeal overruled for his suspension last week. Elsewhere, it's Hogg continues at 15. You mentioned Tommy Seymour on one wing with Sean Lamont, continuing another midfield of Mark Bennett and Alex Dunbar. Halfbacks Greg Leadlaw and Peter Horn. Front row, Alasdair Dickinson, Ross Ford and Ewan Murray. Tim Swinson in for Richie Gray. He partners brother Johnny Gray in second row. And there's a back row of Johnny Beattie, Blair Cowan and Rob Harley. So as you mentioned, there are quite a few changes there. We will have try scorer prices come live shortly, but we are just waiting on the full confirmation of team news. But Italy at 5-1, Jeff, you think there could be some miles in that?
I think there could be, yeah, certainly. I mean, the Italians have got a very good pack, so they'll challenge the Scottish forwards. And as you said, Morrissey. Yeah, it sounds like Morrissey, doesn't it? Morrissey. He played really, really well against England, and he did open up the England midfield, and there was some good play. Gorry played well again, as we expect from him. He's a very talented number 10, as we said before. And Hyamoni, although his kicking boots were off form, he hits the ball a hell of a long way. And if he gets his sights in line and Italy get their penalties, he's a physical animal. It'll be interesting to see how Horn competes with him running at him. There's not many, charging fly halves that are playing in world rugby, and he's one of the few. He's very physical as a fly half. Other fly halves don't like him. He could create some space for the players around him.
Very interesting. I happen to think it might be quite a low scoring game, so that could be one to watch once the game goes live. The total point spreads, score spreads as well. As I said, try scorers prices to go live later, but Luca Morisi, I guess, would be the price to watch out for, Jeff.
Yeah, I think a little bit of him. But also, Hyamoni. You've got to
get a big price. Yeah, Haimona is obviously, he likes to run the ball to the line, as you mentioned. He'll charge with it, and he defends D's up pretty well. So Haimona could be another mention as an anytime try scorer. As we say, prices on those will go live.
The other one you're going to say, of course, is Parisi, isn't it? Sergio Parisi.
Always. He's always kind of floating in around about the 4-1, 5-1 mark, and you just know when those rooks get ever closer towards the Scottish line, or the line out in the corner, or even a decent scrum within the 22, you just know he's going to pick and go. And he showed against England at Twickenham a fortnight ago that he still knows where that line is.
He does, and he can sidestep and dodge. And from the Scottish side, you've got to look at Stuart Hogg. He's a world-class player. You recognise the talent that man has, his ability to find space, and he's got pace. So Hogg is always going to be there or thereabouts, and he's always worth a bet as an all-time, any-time try scorer.
The second game of the afternoon, then, this one fancy to be quite a competitive one, as to the bookmakers. It's priced up with France at 4-6 at home versus Warren Gatland's Wales at 13-10. I guess a sign of what we've seen in the last 2 weeks, Jeff, that these prices are how they are. France just awarded a slight shade of favouritism. The handicap betting just sees a 2-point head start for Wales. I think it could be a very interesting one, this one. We do have full team news available on both of these two sides. I can run you through now what we've got about France. Interesting substitution in the back line is that Bryce Doolan comes in for Scott Spedling at fullback, a player that I rate quite highly. Also, you've got Siafane Gwatune, who replaces Teddy Thomas on the wing. Teddy Thomas injured, so that a forced replacement. They go with Doolan, Huguet, Remy Lamoret, Wesley Fofana, Gwatune, Lopez, Parra, Shuli, Leroux, Dussatoir, Maestri, Tuafanua, Slimani, Girardo, and Ben Arous, who made his debut a fortnight ago. So there are a couple of changes there, but it's quite interesting to see that Mathieu Bastereau, who's been a stalwart in that midfield for some seasons, has been moved out. I guess that, we know that Wales are going to enter this game with some pretty hard-running, hard-hitting centres, and Philippe Saint-André is elected to keep arguably the biggest and heaviest centre in the world of rugby, or world international rugby, out of the squad, Jeff.
Yeah, it's interesting because if you're looking at the French back line, they've gone much more for a ball-playing back line, as if they feel that the opportunity might be to be able to run the ball a little bit. And obviously, with Dulling coming in as fullback, I think he's much more of a ball-playing fullback. Obviously, Fofana being in there as well. And Parra coming back at scrum half. That's a big call for France. He's an experienced player, a lot of quality. I think the way that France would look at this game is, if you look at the way Wales have been playing in the early games, they've lacked something up front. The French have been a very forward-orientated team, playing very much a driving, rolling maul style of play, driving off the line out. But their back three give them a lot of options in terms of attack. So I expect that we're going to see a very forward-dominated game from the French, but they will have a very good counter-attack. For Wales, you know, you're kind of always looking and saying, well, Lee Halfpenny, they kind of rely on him. He's got a few points to prove. He's obviously playing over in Toulon, so the French players know him well. They'll know that they can't afford to give any penalties away anywhere in their half, because Halfpenny will punish them. North, coming back from his concussion, wasn't happy about being left out 2 weeks ago. This gives him his opportunity to go back onto the field and show what he can do. There's a lot in this game, but of course, the big thing for the Welsh is that they need to get their front five playing. They haven't played well in the previous games. They need to play well this week. And as I say, although they dominated the game against Scotland, they just couldn't convert that into points. I've not seen anything from Wales so far that says they'll do it this time.
So you think that France deserve favourites, particularly at home at 4-6. And just quickly with the other bit of Wales team news, of course, no Alex Cuthbert for them, who's been a prolific, maybe not this season, but in seasons past, prolific Six Nations performer. But they're keeping with the youngster Liam Williams, who of course initially came in for George North. He switches onto the other wing, so a bit of a change there. And Alex Cuthbert not featuring in the 23 at all. So you think France at 4-6 at home? Do you think it'll be a close? You mentioned it'll be a close enough game, but do you think they could cover a -2 handicap at 10-11?
I think they could do that quite easily. You know, I can see this being a very close game, but I can see it being a sort of an 8-point win to France, anywhere between 5 and 8 points.
Well, you're getting a bit more value if you fancy the 1-12 winning margin dozens for France, or you can get 6-10 points in the 5-point winning margins at 5-1. If we're looking at try scorers, then Jeff, we have the prices all up and running for this game as the team news has been confirmed. Favourites in the market, unsurprisingly, you're looking at Wesley Fofana 100-30, George North the same price, Liam Williams 4-1, and then Reece Webb also at 4-1. He has a knack of scoring and he's in pretty good try scoring form as the Welsh scrum half at 4-1. Bryce Doolan, who enters the side, has a reasonably good try scoring pedigree at 9-2. Any of these or players I haven't mentioned take your fancy to touch down on Saturday?
Well, I certainly like Doolan. I think he's a very talented young player, shows a lot of skills, plays very much like Ivor Rizzo-Falau from Australia. I'm getting my people right and he's got a tremendous pace, he's got good vision, he attacks well from the back, he's got to be someone to look at. I mean, for the Welsh, Jonathan Davis, he's running off of Jamie Roberts. He's back in the side, didn't do over much last week, but he's always there or thereabouts.
Yeah, Jonathan Davies in the betting at 11-2 then. So Wales win and honourable mentions for Bryce Doolan and Jonathan Davies. And I'll throw Reece Webb in there as well. Sunday then, and arguably the game that may, well, it'll certainly go a long way to deciding who's going to win this year's Six Nations. It is Ireland versus England at the Aviva Stadium. Ireland are favourites for the game at 8-11. The draw 18-1. England at 6-5. And the handicappers are giving just 1 point between them. It's a 10-11 each of two, minus and plus one on the handicap. England obviously with the advantage. We've got a $1 million question, Jeff. Who wins?
The $1 million question that always breaks your heart, because in this one you look at it and you say the bookies have got it right. I think Ireland in the Aviva have a slight advantage, and that slight advantage will be just enough. They're a very settled side, the Irish side, missing Jamie Heaslip, obviously the injuries that he got against the French game, the vertebrae keeping him out for a few weeks. But other than that, they're a fairly settled side. You're going to see the quality of the players, they've got a good bench as well. All in all, they're a very established side. For England, we've got, hopefully it's going to be the same sort of side we saw playing the last 2 weeks. But as I say, the question marks that Italy raised about the England game, about the England defence, would certainly not have fallen on deaf ears in Ireland with the likes of Johnny Sexton playing. He is currently the form fly half in the Northern Hemisphere. England have got to be aware of him. Obviously, Scotland have got to be aware of Jamie. Ireland have got to be aware of Jamie Joseph and what he can do. We saw Joseph playing so well the other week, and everyone keeps comparing him to Jerry Gasker. Not quite there yet. But
Jeff, we're still sat on this 33-1 for him to be the top tournament try scorer, Jonathan Joseph. So I hope he flourishes on the Emerald Isle.
You've got a sneaky centre on that one, haven't you? I hope he does, but I think he's got a very, very good understanding with Ford, and they work well together as a partnership. I think, obviously, the club-country partnership is working very, very well there. It's working well also with Lufa Burrell, who, although he's a separate player, he comes from Northampton, obviously. They've got a combination that seems to be working. The interesting thing is that England has chosen to drop Johnny May and send him back to his club. Noel will start on the wing. It should be... I don't understand that, to be honest, because I thought that Johnny May didn't do anything wrong against Italy. In fact, he set up Cipriani's try. So,
and he obviously came into the tournament on the back of a fantastic autumn, continues to play well for Gloucester, but I don't know that I like Jack Noel. I think having him in the squad is gives us an extra edge that maybe even Johnny May doesn't provide. I think he's a tenacious defender, Jack Noel as well, and the things he's been doing for Exeter and when he got his chance in the Six Nations last year. I don't mind that selection. I think it's maybe a little bit harsh to see the Johnny May sent back to club, not including the 23. But
I agree. I think that Jack is an outstanding young player, and I think that it's interesting from a perspective of Lancaster's not one to change his squads dramatically, and he's left him out. He's left Danny Kerr out. Guys like that who've been stalwarts in his squad for a long period of time. He's settled on the forwards in this England side. You know, he stayed with the same group of forwards that have started the championship. They're a good quality side. They know what they're doing. He's got his replacements, so he's going to bring on the field. All in all, I'm a bit worried because obviously if Brown's not playing, so it'd be Alex Goode who starts, I should think, and that might be why Jack's got the job, because he used to play fullback, so gives a little bit more security in that back three, expecting the sort of the bombardment that will come off Sexton's boot, and the way that Ireland chase up their kicks, they do that choke tackle. If they can get back there and get the defenders and who catch the ball and hold them up, they get the scrum. And Ireland will be confident that they can win their scrums. That will be a big battle up front as well. And, how well Ireland deal with that, whether Jack McGrath can cope well with Dan Cole, whether he can't. This is all interesting battles for a big game that's going to take place. As I say, sadly, my heart says England, but my head says Ireland, and I think it'll be very, very close.
So it's just a narrow 8-11 Ireland for you. I'm hoping I'm not letting heart cloud head here, Jeff, but I think we can do it. Obviously, you've got memories of 2012, for example, when England went over to Ireland needing the win for the Grand Slam, and I think from the first scrum we kind of knew it was never going to happen. But I don't know, for me, I have confidence in England this time out, and I think that the 6-5 maybe does hold a bit of interest. So we'll have to see. We'll see this time next week how that goes. As I say, we are still waiting for confirmed team news. You say we don't know who England are going to be starting at 15 and a variety of other positions yet, so we haven't got any prices about the try scorer market live. They will go live shortly. You'd be looking at Jonathan Joseph, I'd imagine, for one as a try scorer. Ireland haven't been that free scoring going forward. I mean, again, you maybe look at the scrum half position where O'Leary's been, he's looked dangerous with a ball in hand. But, Conor Murray's looked dangerous with a ball in hand. But any other potential try scorers for you, Jeff?
You know, you look at the Irish side, and you've got Kearney, you've got Bowe, you've got Zeebo. These guys are all world-renowned try scorers, so we know that there's an ability to score tries. It hasn't happened yet. The hope is that it doesn't happen on Sunday as an Englishman. But you've got to look at those guys. You've got to say that they have the potential to cut loose given the chance. England's defence is going to have to be a lot better than it was against Italy. From an England point of view, you know, obviously Jack coming back into the side, you're going to look at him and say that he's got to be up there amongst the try scorers. Joseph obviously has got to be. You're not going to get very good odds on him, but he's got to be there as a try scorer. Everyone's going to be looking at him and marking him. Might create space outside him. You don't know.
What about inside him? Luther Burrell, perhaps.
Well, I'm a bit disappointed with Luther. I mean, when he had that break and he got clear, instead of putting his head down and going for it, he stopped and looked for a flare, didn't he, against Wales, and it kind of missed an opportunity. So he needs a bit more confidence, I think. I don't see him as a confident player in that sense. He's still trying to establish himself and keep himself in the team, so he's not going to take chances. He'll shift the ball. Joseph has done well with the ball in his hands. If you're Burrell, what do? You give it to Joseph and run off of him. If he's marked, the wingers will come in. There is chances for Alex Goode to obviously join up there as well as a fullback coming into the line. Not known for his speed, not quite the pace of a Mike Brown, but he still gets around the field and can create an opportunity.
Okay, then. So we're going to have to finish on this week's podcast with a recommendation for Ireland from you, Jeff. I'm not sure. So I thought I'd hear myself uttering those words this year. Final word then before we finish off for the week. I suppose if you think that Ireland win this weekend, you would probably be wanting to back them to win the Six Nations.
Well, interestingly, I don't, as we said at the start of the thing, I don't see this being a Grand Slam year. if England can win, if England can win, you know, they've got France to face, Ireland have got Wales to face. So it's still going to be pretty tight games. I think the last games in the last weeks will decide whether Grand Slams can take place, but this week will decide the wooden spoon.
That's fair enough. If you do think that France can do the business like Jeff this weekend, then there is certainly mileage to back them to win the Six Nations at 11-8. England, curiously, whilst outsiders for this Sunday's game, are actually 4-5 to be crowned champions. Jeff, well, we'll look forward to, with great anticipation, this weekend's fixtures, and I hope you are wrong, at least on Sunday.
Well, so do I, but... you know, the interesting thing is, as usual with the bookies, they've got it right. The reason that England are favourites for the Six Nations is because of the extra true tries against the Italians that should never have been.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.